All right, we're ready for Numbers 33 to 36 in our study tonight. And this is the outline, one of the outlines that we're following in our study. And we are in the last section, obviously, because we're winding up in the book of Numbers tonight and ready to start into Deuteronomy next time. So we're going to wind up. We're talking about the new instructing as he outlines it here. That is, Baxter does. And very similar points being made by Wiersbe, and we'll forego that. Let's review where we've been. This is our last trip through this, for a while anyway. We won't get every chapter. Chapter 1 dealt with the first census. There was one later on that we'll come to here in just a moment. Chapter 2 dealt with the separation by the camps. We have the Levites chosen and numbered, the duties of the Levites. We have the unclean person and the restitution or test for an unfaithful wife. What we have in chapter 6, Nazarite vow, yes. Chapter 7 dealt with offerings for leaders, dedication of the Levites. Chapter 9, all right, we have the Passover and the cloud and the fire. That's not the first time we saw the cloud and the fire. We'll flag that in our study tonight. Chapter 10, all right, very good. And so one of the main things here is the departure from Sinai. We'll flag that also in our traveling in chapter 33. Chapter 11 dealt with people complain. The Lord sends quail. We have Miriam and Aaron complaining against Moses. Spies sent into the land. Chapter 14. All right, yeah. Because of their attitude in chapter 13 and their rebellion, they're punished to wandering for how long? 40 years. And so we're going to get to that 40 years in our study tonight. 15 deals with laws and sacrifices. We have the rebels that are killed in the wilderness, led by Korah. What do we have in chapter 17? One of the evidences of the Aaronic priesthood. We have four that we dealt with in the context, and we'll talk about that perhaps at a later time. We have the support for the priesthood. We have the laws of purification, water from the rock, and the death of Aaron. We'll flag that also in our study tonight. Chapter 21. All right, this is where the fiery serpents come to play. We'll also flag that in our journeys. If you haven't read ahead, that's what we'll be making a survey of the journeys in chapter 33. Chapter 22 is what? Yeah, Balak wants to curse Israel. He makes that request. We have his prophecy in chapters 24, 23 and 24. And then we have in chapter 25, since that didn't work. Yeah, they committed harlotry at the encouragement of Balaam. Balak was behind that, but Balaam encouraged that and hit in that direction. Now we have the second census. Remember the first one in chapter 1? This is the second one. Chapter 27. Yeah, new leader and inheritance. Then we have offerings and the feast offerings. We have laws about vows. The Midianites defeated, and then the tribes settle on the east side. What tribe settled on the east side? Yeah, Reuben, Gad, and a half a tribe of Manasseh. That was chapter 32. All right, question number one for tonight is, what is chapter 33, 34, 35, and 36 about? What is 33? All right, it has to do with a review of their past travels. We'll talk about the purpose behind that. What is that? What does that accomplish? And then we'll talk about what those travels were, some things we learn about that. And then there's the command for the conquest. Here's what you're going to have to do. Chapter 34, what's it about? Boundaries that are set. Where are the boundaries for the land that's going to be inherited? And then the leaders are to divide that land. Chapter 35. Yeah, cities up for the Levites. And there's the cities of refuge. And we'll talk about those. And then chapter 36, kind of an addendum to a law that is dealt with earlier in chapter 27. What's this about? Marriage of a daughter who inherits when there is no son. And so can she take that inheritance to another tribe? And the answer is no, she can't do that. So we'll talk about all of that when we get to chapter 36. All right, let's get underway with chapter 35, or 33 rather. And this is a review of the past travels. And we may wonder on the surface, what is the purpose behind this? We've already been through that. And the story that's told here has already been told in greater detail in the book of Exodus and in the book of Numbers. So what does this serve? Well, we'll get to that here in a second. Let's start with verse 1, that these are the journeys of the children of Israel when they went out of Egypt. And verse 2 said, now Moses wrote down the starting points. Your King James and American Standard will say their goings out. English Standard said starting plans or places, starting places, stage by stage. The NET says their departures. In other words, this is their a record of their movement from one place to another place to another place to another place. That's all that verse 2 is actually saying. Some have called this simply their encampments. Here's where they camped, and then they moved and they camped here, and here's where they moved and they camped there. Now we'll start at verse 5 in just a moment, but let's flag some time because we're going to track some time. There's much of the time we don't know about. So let's start with the time that's mentioned at verse 3. They left Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the month, that is, since they left Egypt. So on the first month, in the first year, and in the first month of that year. So they left, or since they left at least, that flags that. Now we're going to get some dates later in the context, and we'll say that's been a month, that's been 2 months, this has been a year, and then we lose a little track of time, and I'll tell you why in just a few moments. All right, with that in mind, when they left Egypt, I don't remember another place where this particular thing is mentioned, but at verse 4, the Egyptians were burying their firstborn. That was because of that 10th plague. And while they're burying them, they're leaving and they're getting out. And so we start at Ramses, starting at verse 5. Now let's talk about the purpose behind this. Let me back up, though, before I do that. We're going to see two things in the travel, from Egypt to the death of Aaron. And we're going to go from the death of Aaron to the conquest. So this is from the time they leave Egypt to they're ready to cross over and conquer the land, which is dealt with in the book of Joshua. Make sense? We'll talk about the approximate mileage and the approximate time in just a moment. We'll try to summarize all of that. Now, what's the purpose behind that? Well, number one, we have a historical record. We already have an historical record, but this is a condensed historical record where we can read chapter 33 and get a quick glimpse of their travel journey. That's one thing that's accomplished. The second thing that's accomplished is Moses wrote down their starting points. They're moving. In other words, Moses kept a record. We moved from here, we moved to here, we moved here, and we moved here, and we moved here, then we moved there. What that did is serve as a reminder of God's guidance and provision of the past. God took care of them through all of that. And that ought to be just a reminder as they look, oh yeah, well I remember going there, and I remember what happened there, and I remember this, and I remember that, and I remember God taking care of us. I remember water from a rock. I remember manna coming from, I remember the quail. I remember all of that. And so that reminds them of God's provision and guidance in the past. Thirdly, it gives them hope that God's going to guide them in the future. If God helped them through all the wilderness, then God's going to help them as they conquer the land. Does that make sense? All right. Now I want to add another point here for what it's worth to you. We haven't come across this point, but this is an interesting point to make. And that is, their clothes and their sandals did not wear out. Their clothes and their sandals did not wear out at all, nor did their feet swell. Now, we haven't seen that in Exodus. We haven't seen that in Numbers, but we will see that in Deuteronomy. So just flag a couple of three verses here. Might make a marginal note that during all of these journeys, their clothes didn't wear out. Now, you think of traveling for 40 years and your clothes don't wear out. And your sandals, that's your traveling, that's your tires, and they don't wear out for all that mileage. So here's your passages, Deuteronomy 8 and verse 4, Deuteronomy 29 and 5, and Nehemiah 9 and 21. I'll give those again. Their clothes did not wear out, their sandals did not wear out, nor did their feet swell. Now can you imagine walking the distance they did that we'll track in a moment, and your feet don't swell? So that's part of God's provision. Again, those passages, Deuteronomy 8, 4, Deuteronomy 29, 5, and Nehemiah 9, 21. So God took care of them, and that's part of this reminder of God's provision for them. Making sense? All right. Now, here's where we're going. I'm going to track it on a better map in just a moment, but this is a map we've seen constantly where they came out of Egypt, made their way through the wilderness down to Mount Sinai, And that's the traditional Mount Sinai. Some think Mount Sinai is over here, and there's some good argument for that. It's not fully convincing. So we're going to go with the traditional route, come down to Mount Sinai, make their way up here to Kadesh Barnea, make their way around Edom, and then on up here ready to conquer the land. That's what we're about to track here. So I know this is kind of small, but I'll try to flag where we are on the map here in just a second. We'll try to follow the little dot here where we're going to track this here in just a second. Now, I want to add another note here before we get into the tracking of that. We're not going to mention every place. There are some cities mentioned in Numbers 33 that are not mentioned in the historical record previous. That's an interesting point. And there are some cities that are hard to identify. In other words, there will be a city that's mentioned that no one knows exactly where that city is. So here's some conclusions we have to draw. The history that we have is not complete, nor was it intended to be complete. In other words, you may say, I'd like to have a complete history. I'd like to know every city they went to and exactly where it was located, and I'd like to travel that. We don't have it. And if that was necessary, God would have given that. So we don't have a complete history of every city where they visited. And secondly, that the history we have, and this is one of the most impressive things about Numbers, is a brief history. It's just a brief history is all this is. This is not an exhaustive history. There could be volumes written of the 40 years. Can you imagine if you kept a record of every event? There'd be volumes and volumes. And what we have is recorded, not even in all the book of Numbers, but just part of the book of Numbers, it records this 40 years. So it's a brief history. Does that make sense to you? So let's get underway here. But here's one of the things I learned from this. They move camp a lot. Now, get this picture that when they came out of Egypt here and made their way down to Sinai, up to that point, they're not transporting the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant. But from this point on, they're taking the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant, a little more involved. And so during that 40 years that they're traveling, they're already over in this area at that point of 40 years, making their way around. And during that 40 years, they have the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant and all the things that are involved with the tabernacle. Does that make sense? A lot involved in that. A lot of moving about. Let's start at verse 5. They start off where? In Ramses, and that was in the first month. So verse 5 said they left Succoth. They left Ramses and they came to Succoth, which is, if I can get my arrow down here on my point, that's right here, just not far from Ramses. They come from Ramses down here to Succoth. And that was their first encampment. One of the next places that's mentioned is Etham. Well, Etham is where God first gave them the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, for what that may be worth, Exodus chapter 13. They came on down. Etham is not mentioned there. Paharaoth, mentioned at verse 7, is the next place that's mentioned. And it's at that point, right in that area where they come across the Red Sea. So you might make a marginal note at verse 7 and 8, that's where they passed through the Red Sea. It's where God parted the waters, they came through the Red Sea. So it's a brief history. We don't see a lot yet, just yet. Well, where else do they go? They come to a place called, what happened at Marah? The waters were healed, Exodus chapter 15. So here we are right here. And we come on down and they come to Elam. Elam is mentioned down. We don't know the exact location of Elam, but we know it was down a little south of there. That was the place of the 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. Then they camp by the Red Sea, the text says. Well, then we come on to verse 11, and now we have a date to talk about. It's not given here, but it's given in a parallel account. And that is they moved from the Red Sea into the wilderness of Sin. All right, the wilderness of Sin is right in this area. And we are told in Exodus chapter 16 that now that's been 1 month. So it took them a month to come from Ramses down here to this wilderness of Sin, right in this area here. We're a month in. All right, let's go a little further. We come now to Sinai. We have Rephidim, which is mentioned down here. And then they come to Mount Sinai, if that be that's the traditional site. Well, at Sinai, they stayed there for about a year, 11 months plus. I'm not giving the exact days on that, but 11 months plus. Chapter 11, 10 and verse 11 tells us that. They were there. It took them 2 months to get there. So we're a month in our travels to get down to about right here to Elam, and then another month. So by the time they got to Sinai, they're 2 months from Egypt. Is it making sense? From this point, we're going to lose some track of time. Why? Because it's not told. It's not revealed. And so we're not told about the timeline from this point forward. All right. Now, you might bracket off for your study verses 16 to 35. Verses 16 to 35 have to do with the wilderness wanderings that get them from Mount Sinai all the way up here and make it up to Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea is a key place. What happens at Kadesh Barnea? Verse 37, they finally come to Kadesh. That's where the spies were sent out. And so you might make a note to the margin there at verse 37. This is where the spies, Numbers chapter 13, were sent out. And so all of those cities that are mentioned there from verse 16 down through verse 35 or 37 is what we would refer to as that's not all the wilderness wanderings, but they're wandering in this wilderness right through here. Now notice right here, there's a city called Hazeroth. Verse 17, that's where Miriam had leprosy. So that's the significance of that encampment. So are we making sense? We've come down here and we stayed about a year here. It took us 2 months. So we're about 14 months in, and now we've taken off making our way toward Kadesh Barnea. So now we jump some time to verse 38. What's going on at verse 38? Told you this is a brief history because we skipped a lot of years. All right, yeah, we are in the 40th year. Does that make sense to you? We're in the 40th year of their travel, and we have the death of Aaron. How old was he? He's 123 and died at Mount Hor. All right, so that got us from Ramses. These travels took us from Ramses all the way up, and we're up here in this region close to Kadesh Barnea at Mount Hor, and Aaron has died. Now we're ready to go from Aaron to the conquest. It's even briefer now. All right, so we're in the 40th year. When we're at this point, now they have, so in other words, from they were about 14 months in, it took them a while, and they spent a great deal of time right here at Kadesh Barnea. Does that make sense? From the time they sent the spies into the land before they make their way around Edom. All right. Now, let's go at verse 41. As they leave Kadesh Barnea, verse 40, they had a battle with King of Arad. Remember that? He was just to the north. He tried to stop them. All right. We have that recorded in Numbers chapter 21. Drop down to Punon at verse 42. That's the instance in Numbers 21 of the fiery serpents. Very good. Fiery serpents take place there. All right. We come on down to verse 47, and we have them coming to Nebo. What happens at Mount Nebo? In other words, they're on up here by this point. And we'll come back and track some of this in just a moment. But they're on up here at Mount Nebo. What happens at Mount Nebo? All right, Moses sees the promised land and he dies. So this is quickly, we're quickly running out the 40 years and are about done. Now let's go and drop down to verse 49. And they are now at the Acacia Grove in the plains of Moab. You might make a marginal note. This is where the book of Deuteronomy is developed. I don't mean written. I mean this is what Deuteronomy, we'll talk about this next week, is a record of sermons that Moses preached in a 30-day period on the embarkment of going across the land. So he's getting the people ready, and it's a record of sermons. It's all the book of Deuteronomy is. And they're powerful sermons. And Smith calls it a 30-day revival. And so, pardon his phraseology there, which is somewhat charismatic. I'm quoting him, and he's right. It's a 30-day period of trying to revive the people with the right spirit of conquering into the land. All right, where does that take place? Right here at verse 49 in the plains of Moab. Here they are, right up here in the plains of Moab, right up in this region right here, ready to go across, and the first place they go is Jericho. Remember that? Joshua 6. We're a ways from Jericho yet. I don't mean distance by miles. I'm talking about in study of books. We've got to go through Deuteronomy before we get there. All right, Let's go back just for a moment. And what I wanted to say right here is they left Kadesh. Why didn't they just make their way right across? This is a shorter distance and made their way up. It's a lot closer. And they wanted to do that. And they tried, didn't they? They tried to go through what country? Tried to go through Edom right here. Why couldn't they go through Edom? Wouldn't give permission, wouldn't let them go. So they have to go around Edom. So thus we have this track around Edom and make their way up, and they conquer two kings now. What two kings were they? Not mentioned here. Sihon and Og. And so they have conquered this land over here on this side. Making sense? All right, now let's drop down to verse 50. We spent a little time there. They did a lot of moving, didn't they? And that's just the short version, short history. You say, well, there's some details missing. You're right. There's a lot of details missing, not only in Numbers 33, Numbers. I don't mean it was there and taken away. I just mean God didn't see fit to give all the details that we may have be curious about. So this is a brief history of those 40 years. Now, let's go to the end of the chapter now and talk about the instructions for the conquest. From this point on, well, actually backing up a few chapters, this is just getting ready for the conquest. So what is his instructions here beginning at verse 50? All right. Three things they are told. Right here listed on the screen. Drive out the inhabitants. Now, let's talk about the significance of that. Notice that when you cross over into Jordan, verse 50, you shall drive out the inhabitants of the land. Now, let's stop and make a note here, if you're so disposed to mark in your Bibles. God is driving them out, not because I want to get these people out and make a place for my people. It's not like, well, these are good people and they're decent people, but I really want it for my people, so y'all go and be killed. But God's driving them out because of their sin. Yes. Now, let me give you three references with reference to that. Let's go back to Genesis 15 and in verse 6. God made a promise in Genesis 15, 6, this land would be given to the descendants of Abraham. I said verse 6, verse 16, Genesis 15 and in verse 16. And he said, this is not going to take place. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not going to give you this land just right now. And here's why. Because the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. What does that mean? Hadn't happened yet. Yeah, they have iniquity. It's a sinful nation, but it's going to get riper before it's over. And then I'll be ready to drive them out. Let me give you another reference. Chapter 32 of Numbers in verse 21. I'm not going to take the time to read that, but that also talks about the sin of the people. But it's dealt with right here in our very text. That you're going to drive them out and talks about destroying their idolatry. We'll come back to that. But all of those passages, chapter 32, verse 21, Genesis 15, 16, and then this text here, God is driving them out because of their sin. Whether he ever gives it to anybody else, he's punishing these people for their sins. That makes sense? So I say that because sometimes we may leave the impression God drove these people out so he'd give his people a land without giving emphasis to the fact God's punishing them for their sin. And we see that at verse 56. Now, notice what else he says at verse 52. I want you to drive them out, but there's something else I want you to do. Destroy their idols. Why destroy their idols? Just leave them. They're worthless idols. All right. So to make sure that Israel's not tainted with this idolatry, number one, you drive them out, and so you make no relationship with them. Secondly, you get rid of their idols, and so they're all gone. And then thirdly, verse 54. All right. And here we're told again, this is not the first time, how is it going to be divided? How is it going to be determined who gets what? Larger tribe gets a larger territory, smaller tribe gets a smaller territory. Pretty simple. Look at verse 56. That if you don't do this that I tell you, driving the people out, what's going to happen? Yeah, I will do to you what I thought I would do to them. Now notice at verse 55, I want to add two thoughts before we go to chapter 34. That if you don't drive them out, they will become, the New King James says, irritants in your eyes, depending on your translation of the New King James. They are updated every year. Yours may read different. They'll become irritant to your eyes. In other words, they're going to be a pain to you. They're going to be a thorn in your side because you didn't drive them out. Did that happen? Absolutely. Let's go to, just quickly, might make a marginal note if you don't want to turn over there with us. Let's go to Psalm 106. Psalm 106 is a historical psalm. So we're dealing with history. Let's go to a historical psalm. And we don't have time to track the whole thing, but look at verse 34. They did not destroy the people whom God had commanded. In other words, they didn't drive out the people. Did they drive some of them out? Yeah. Did they kill some of them? Yeah. But they spared some and they made covenants with some. So God did, they didn't destroy the people, but they mingled with the Gentiles. Guess what happened? They learned their works and served their idols. I thought they were supposed to destroy those idols. They were. They didn't. And thus they ended up serving those idols. Make sense? They became irritants to their eyes. All right, chapter 33. The review of the travel route and instruction for the conquest. Any questions or comments? Let's go to 34. Let's talk about the boundaries that are set and that the leaders are to divide the land. We have, first of all, in chapter 34, the south, the west, the north, and the eastern boundaries. And then this is to be given to 9.5 tribes. Now, why 9.5 tribes? Well, we've already seen there were 2.5 tribes on the east side of Jordan have already been given these three sections. That is, we have Reuben and Gad, and then 0.5 tribe of Manasseh. The other half is going to be on the west side of Jordan. So what we're actually talking about is this section here. This is what the boundaries of the 2.5 tribes are not given here. That's already been settled. That's already been decided. Here's the boundaries for this 9.5 tribes. So we're not going to go through every detail of this, but let's start with the southern border. He starts and he mentions the southern border, that it starts at basically the Sea of Galilee, not the Sea of Galilee, the Salt Sea, which is the same as the Dead Sea right here. Salt Sea or Dead Sea, right here. It's going to start there, and it's going to go down by the border of Edom and make its way further down and across over to end at the sea. Talking about what sea now? Mediterranean Sea. So basically, this is the southern border that we just read. Without giving all the details of that and reading all of that, that's the southern border. So it's going to come down by Edom and make its way all the way over to the Salt Sea. So it starts at the Salt Sea and goes over to the Great Mediterranean Sea. All right, now the western border is pretty simple, only one verse. Where is it? Mediterranean Sea. So there's your western border. Now the northern border is a little more controversial. What do we know about the northern border? What else do we know? All right, it mentions Mount Hor. I thought we dealt with Mount Hor way down here. Remember where Aaron died at Mount Hor? But they're talking about a northern border being Mount Hor. Well, let me give you a couple of references on that. I mean, not necessarily textual references. Barnes observes that Mount Hor dealt with a chain of mountainous, the mountainous region that ran some 80 miles in length. And that it ended up, and the entrance of it was at Hamath. Notice at verse 8 of our text, Hamath is mentioned. And Hamath is 120 miles north of Damascus. Colin Dalit suggests that this boundary is so indefinite, it's hard to determine with exactness. Well, they may be right about that, but we know where they settled. And so the northern boundary is a short boundary across the top up there. And it was north of Damascus. Making sense? Now then we have the eastern border, and where does it go? It comes down the Jordan River. Notice it, verse 11. Get ready to make a marginal note. comes by the Sea of Chinnereth. You ever heard of the Sea of Chinnereth? Stephen, you been to the Sea of Chinnereth? Sea of Galilee. Stephen's been there. That's why I asked him that. He's been to the Sea of Galilee. All right, so it comes by the Sea of Galilee and comes down and ends at the Salt Sea. Make sense? So there's your 9.5 tribes. All right, so let's go now to verses 13 to 15. It mentions 9.5 tribes. This is going to the 9.5 tribes because land has already been given to the 2.5 tribes. So it reminds us of that. So let's see what the 2.5 tribes are. At verse 14, it mentions Reuben, and then there's Gad and half a tribe of Manasseh, a little bigger picture. So Reuben is down here at the Salt Sea. This is where they camp before they cross over. What later becomes the tribe of Reuben. This is Mount Nebo. That's where Moses was and saw the promised land and where he died. All right. Then you have Gad, which is right there in the middle, which basically goes from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. And then you have up northeast rather, of the Sea of Galilee, the tribe of Manasseh. Making sense? They've already got that. So these 9.5 tribes are going to get the rest. Now let's talk about the leaders dividing the land. Who are they? Beginning at verse 16. All right, Eleazar, who is the high priest, and then Joshua, who had been appointed to replace Moses, and then there is someone from every tribe. And so there's one from Judah, who is Caleb, and Shemuel from Simeon, and Eliab from Benjamin, and Bukai from Dan, and of the tribe of Manasseh, Heniel, and Ephraim of the tribe of Ephraim, there's Kemuel. Zebulun has Elizaphan, and Issachar has Paltela, and Asher has Ahahud, and Naphtali has Pedahol. Now, how did they divide that? Make a marginal note if you wish, chapter 33:54. The only information that we have of that, how they determine that, a larger tribe gets a larger section, a smaller tribe gets a smaller section. So there was wisdom and judgment used, rather than the text telling us this tribe gets to this river, to this tree, to that fence, to this da 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 da. Make sense? That's how they determine that. So that gets us through verse chapter 34. This is all preparatory work for conquering in the land. So here are the leaders that are going to do that. Here's your boundaries. Y'all will have to decide who gets what, and they did. Make sense? Now then, we're ready for some judiciary things in chapters 35 and 36. In chapter 35, we have cities for the Levites and cities of refuge. So why is that mentioned here? Well, it didn't need to be mentioned early in the book of Numbers or Exodus because they hadn't got there yet. They're on the verge of crossing into the land. They're within a few months of getting across into the land, so they need to know that we need to have cities for the Levites. They didn't get any land. They were not a part of that. So let's talk about these cities of the Levites. I know this is small, but here are the cities of the Levites. Now, if you look at the little skew over here that we have, and I'll try to get this where you can see, that the star represents the cities, and we'll flag them in a moment, so don't worry about it. Our cities of refuge, which were also Levite cities. And the difference in a solid and a circle has to do with whether the location is certain or not. We know certain cities, and then we don't know the exact location of other cities. But still, these are the cities of the Levites. How many cities were there? Verse 7. There was 48. 42 plus the six cities of refuge made 48. We find that at verse 7. All right. Now let's work our way through this. We're not. There's a lot of information we don't have, but this when a city was decided, and we'll talk about where these cities are and how we know where they are, of the cities that are flagged. When a city was decided, then they were to be given a city and the suburbs. The King James at verse 2 talks about the common lands. The New King James uses the word common land. The King James uses the word suburbs. So in other words, the ground around. So I take it that there's the difference between the 1,000 cubics and the 2,000 cubics that are mentioned. So let's talk about what those measurements are. 1,000 cubics would be how many feet? 1,500 feet or 500 yards. So 18 inches per cubic is what we're going by. And so the 2,000 cubics would be 3,000 feet. So what's the difference in the 3,000 and the 1,500? Well, 1,500 times 2 would be 3,000. So I take it that what the text is saying at verse 3 and 4, they were to have 1,500 feet for their cattle, and then there's another 1,500 feet for their fields and their vineyards, making the 3,000 feet. Does that make sense? That beyond the city, the suburbs of the city, would be 3,000 feet out, would be their territory for their cattle and their crops. Make sense? All right, I know we're hurriedly looking at that. Now, I'm going to skip verse 6 because verse 6 is going to be repeated in principle. There are 48 cities. Now, again, verse 8 tells me something about how this was determined. By the size of the tribe. And so some tribes might have more cities for the Levites. So notice how the cities, without tracking every one of those, every one of the cities that are listed there, that should be I didn't go back and count. This is from Logos Bible Software. But the 48 cities should be there, and you see how they're scattered. And so here, maybe a larger tribe would have more cities of Levites, and the lesser tribes would have lesser. Make sense? All right, let's flag a couple of passages here that'll help us. Joshua 21, and Joshua 21 is where the cities are named. So you say, well, where'd you get all these names? Because I didn't see that in Numbers chapter 35. You don't see it in Numbers 35. We get that from Joshua 21. So all those cities are named in Joshua 21. The priests got 13 cities. The sons of Kohath got 10. Sons of Gershon, 13 cities. And the Merarites got 10 cities. That makes your 48 cities. Make sense? Joshua 21 is where we're going to get that information. All right. Now let's talk about the cities of refuge. And let's talk about their purpose. Then we'll get to their location and where they are. And we'll talk about the passages that mention those. There are six cities of refuge. What is the purpose of a city of refuge? All right, very good. Look at verse 11, that when a manslayer kills any person accidentally, he may flee there. If he did it on purpose, we'll see that in a minute, he's not going to be exempt from being killed. And we're going to talk about another passage that'll help us. And the city is shall be a place of refuge from the avenger. That's an interesting word, how that word is used. It's used in Job 19. Where God is said to be the Goel, the Redeemer. It's also used with reference to a kinsman, a near kinsman. It's translated kinsman. So usually this was a near kinsman. So if your loved one was killed by someone, was it murder, first degree murder, or was it accidental death, whatever it was, you would be one of the family members who may execute and follow after them and see that he was taken care of. And so he would flee to a city of refuge, one of these six cities, and they were scattered, three on one side of the river, three on the other. Now, let's get Deuteronomy, just flag some verses. We're running out of time. I want to get to 36. Let me give you some verses you might want to write down. Deuteronomy 4, 41 to 43 mentions the three that are on the east side. We're going to give all those cities in a minute. Joshua 20 names all six. Joshua 20 names all six. Deuteronomy 4, 41 to 43 talks about the three on the east side. Deuteronomy 19, 1 to 4 talks about the use of the cities of refuge. Let's go back to Joshua 20. Joshua 20 says that the man who is fleeing to the city was to go to the gate and explain what's going on. He didn't just run into the city and hide. And I'm running into the city, and I'm going to go find a place to hide. He comes to the gate and explains to the elders of the city, I'm running. I killed a man accidentally, and I'm seeking refuge from the avenger. Joshua 20 explains that. So let's look at verse 16 to 21. If he kills a man on purpose, that's, we call it first degree murder in our day. And he's to be, verse 17, put to death. Might make a marginal note, Genesis 9:6. Since the beginning, Genesis 9:6, whoever shed man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. God has always been in favor of capital punishment. Then verses 22 to 28, if it's accidental, in other words, he's throwing a rock, he didn't see the man, and it hit the man and it killed him, so it's an accidental death. It's not first degree murder. That's not the terminology here, that's modern terminology. He's not guilty, he can live, but, yeah, stay in the city of refuge till the high priest dies. And if he gets out of the city and the avenger catches him and kills him, is the avenger done wrong? No, because he's supposed to stay in the city. Make sense? When the high priest dies, he can go back to his place. So if it's a young high priest, he may be there a while. All right. Now then, verses 29 to 34 comes back and reemphasizes the murderer needs to be put to death. Again, Genesis 9:6. But the person who shall, the murderer shall be put to death, but it needs to be on the testimony, not of just one witness. In other words, there needs to be ample evidence that's cited. Make sense? There needs to be ample evidence. Now, here's the reason for that. Verse 33, it pollutes the land. We're not talking about pollution as we think of polluting the air or trash in the streets, but it corrupts the land is what it does. It's corrupting to the land. It pollutes the land. Make sense? All right. So that's a judicial matter. So let's go on in interest of time to chapter, well, before we do that, here are the six cities. We didn't name them because they're not named in our text tonight. But Joshua 20 names all six of these. So notice there's three conveniently located at the top, in the middle, and the bottom, top, middle, and the bottom, so that you had a place. It wasn't that you put them all in one area, and so the guy in the far distance couldn't get there. God made it fair. So there's your six cities of refuge. And they were also cities of the Levites. All right, let's talk about chapter 36. This is an addendum to a law we've already seen where? Numbers chapter 27. Very good. Chapter 27. So you might flag Numbers 27. This is where, you might just turn back there just briefly. We've got a minute or two to go, and that's about all we're going to get in here. Here were the daughters of Zelophehad. There were five of those who said, wait a minute. If our father dies and doesn't have a son, don't we get his inheritance? And the answer was yes, they get it. So here's the question here. The question is, what about inheritance-changing tribes? What if this woman who is going to inherit marries a man from another tribe? Then does she carry that inheritance there so that this tribe loses part of their land? And so Moses said that in the year of Jubilee, within 7 years, yeah, they will see that unless something changes. So he gave them the word of the Lord, verse 5, and said, what the sons of Joseph speak is right. They're right about that. They'll lose the inheritance. So here's the deal. Here's the addendum to the law. These daughters, if they want to keep their inheritance, need to marry within their own tribe. And so if they marry within their own tribe, then the inheritance stays there. And so they're not to marry outside the tribe. So how'd the people react to that, 10 to 13? They did what the Lord said and did just as the Lord had commanded them. And thus we bring Numbers to a close. So we're ready for Deuteronomy. I didn't get a chance to ask you, so I'll just tell you what my answer is. This always fascinates me. What is the thing that most impresses you about the book of Numbers this time? And it's different each time I study it. And what stands out most to me is the brevity of the description of the 40 years. We're told very little about that. That impresses me. 40 years of wandering, and there's very little said about that. We're not told much about it. We're told suddenly we're at 40 years and it's over. Well, not much is said. That's interesting to me. Why were we not told? God didn't think we needed it. Interesting. We're done.